This is work done at UC San Diego with Harsha Madhyasa, who's now at UC Riverside, George Porter, Rishi Kapoor, and Professors Savage, Snurin, and Vedat. So, suppose someone's deploying a MapReduce application and they want 100 queries per second. What would a low-cost cluster look like? Would it be 10 computers with 20 hard disks? Would it be 100 computers with 500 hard disks? Now suppose someone's using some kind of photo sharing application and they need 1,000 photo views per second. What does that cluster look like? Is it five servers with 500 SSDs? Like, how do these trade-offs happen? The goal of our work is to understand the relationship between the workload, the application, and the actual low-cost configuration. So, if you're building some cluster, you might have many, many different goals. You might want super high performance, you might want redundancy, multi-tenancy, high availability, many possible different goals. In our work, we're focusing on reaching specific performance goals, minimizing cost for a single application. Now, why is this hard? Servers come in many different shapes and sizes, and they're a very diverse set of storage types. So we know that if you have hard disks, they're good on capacity, decent for sequential throughput, but they're terrible at IOPS, but they're also very cheap. For SSDs, they're very good or much better for random operations, but they're much smaller and they're much more expensive. And if you provisioned a system based on sort of a low-end workload where you say, you know, that, hey, this fits into 7200 RPM hard drives, then you might later find that it doesn't work very well for your workload in the future. And for the state of the art, that's what tends to happen. So you take rules of thumb and you apply it to a configuration. So you set off, you benchmark your application, you say, hey, we need 10 servers that look like this. You get your compute SKU, maybe you get a database SKU, and then you replicate it out. And this can lead to some problems because the workload doesn't always behave the same way at high-end workloads versus low-end workloads. So if we take a scale-out configuration for a photo sharing application where you have a single server with some 7200 RPM hard drives, it can work well at low workloads and you kind of get the cost increase that you might expect, but it's not going to be the cheapest configuration. Using our tool, we're able to find lower cost configurations, so up to a 4x cost savings based on the idea of actually matching the storage configuration to the workload in the application and doing that by leveraging heterogeneity in the way that servers are assigned. So the goal of our work is to understand what a low-cost configuration looks like now and what it looks like in the future, because the dynamics of the workload may change how the workload requirements interact with the storage system. And we go about doing this by measuring in the small, then using that information to build a model of the application, and then predicting in the large, and using that to understand these changes in storage dynamics. So our tool, the storage configuration compiler, uses several inputs. One is the cluster building blocks. So these are, the servers with different kinds of different kinds of disks, different CPUs. Then a model of the application, something provided by the application developer, and finally an SLA specification. And in our case, we're using throughput-based specifications. Then the output of our tool is a spectrum of low-cost configurations across workloads. And for any one of those configurations, we can give you an instantiation of what that workload should look like, or what that cluster should look like. So for the rest of the talk, we'll be describing how we model the applications and the hardware, how we use that model to compute low-cost configurations, an example of how that all fits together, how we validated that we're actually finding low-cost configurations, and then applications of our tool for cluster planning. We build our system out of building blocks, so we can have many different types of servers. Each of those different types of servers can have some number of cores, some amount of RAM, some number of many different storage types, and then within the server and without, there are bottlenecks on the I/O bandwidth. Then with that, we can build a model on top. There are many different ways that you would want to model an application with different levels of fidelity. The goal in our work is to find a simple model that is expressive enough to characterize changes in demands. So we model it at a fairly high level, So we break it down into tasks, which are the computations of the application, data sets, which are the pieces of data that those tasks interact with, and then we represent the dependencies between them with edges. So just to run through an example, let's take a photo sharing application, so something like Flickr or Picasa. So we have three data sets. We have a photo data set, a thumbnail data set, and a mapping between tags and photos. So there are several different tasks. Sort of one of the principal tasks, uploading photos. Uploading a photo involves thumbnailing a photo, creating a smaller version, which is computationally intensive, and also writing the tags. So as you go through, you store the photo to the photo data set, write the thumbnail after computing the thumbnail, and write the tags to the tag data set. If you want to view a photo, the sort of high-level result is that you fetch the photo as well as a list of tags associated with the photo. And then when viewing a tag, you fetch the set of photos associated with, or the set of the list of photos associated with the tag and the thumbnails associated with each photo. So now, this is the high-level model, and then whoever is deploying the application needs to annotate it based on micro-benchmark information or tracing information. So for each task, we annotate it with the amount of computation required for a single operation. In this instance, thumbnailing takes much more computation than simply storing the photo. Then for each write, we annotate it with the number and size of write operations, and similarly for reads. And then for each of the data sets, we annotate it with the capacity required for that data set. This is sort of the annotated model. The way we specify SLAs is in terms of the rate of high-level operations per second. So in our case, this might be 100 photo uploads per second, 100 photo views per second, and 300 tag views per second. So now that we have the model and the SLA, let's look at how we actually compute low-cost configurations. The configuration space in general is very large. So if you have workload on the x-axis and cost on the y-axis, you might consider let's pick a single server with a single CPU and a single hard disk, and it's going to be very cheap, but there's no way it's going to meet the SLA. On the other hand, if you pick a very expensive system with millions of servers with millions of SSDs, it'll be really, really performant, but it's going to cost way more than you ever hope to pay. And there are many, many different configurations in between, lots of servers with no storage, et cetera. But what we really want to do is to pick the low-cost configuration that meets the SLA. So how do we do this? Our main insight is that there's a complex interaction between the assignment of storage type and data set. So the packing of, of hard disks and servers may leave room for some other data set, and so we need to consider each permutation of this assignment separately. So the configuration space of sort of finding configurations that meets SLAs for each of these permutations is size number of data sets raised to the number of storage types. So what does this look like? So suppose we have our three data sets and we start off with some assignment of hard disks to data sets. So we'll start off with 7200 RPM drives all around. First, we can compute the number of storage units per data set, assign CPUs for the computation, pack everything into the servers, and arrive at the cost. Then we can repeat that for many other permutations, and then find the global minimum cost across them. So let's look at this in detail. So how many storage units do we need for each data set? So using the SLA in the model, we can get the the requirements on the storage system. So how many IOPS, what kind of sequential throughput. Then we need to match the requirements to the storage units. So at the base case, we need to be able to support the right amount of capacity. So if you have something like a 2 terabyte data set you need, and you have 500 gigabyte hard disks, you need at least 4 of them. For IOPS and throughput, we need to make sure that there's sufficient capacity for the workload. So if you have a write heavy workload, you can imagine doing something like short stroking the disks, where you increase the number of storage units to increase the available throughput. For read heavy workloads, we also consider a configuration where we couple some kind of permanent storage with RAM for caching of the entire workload, or just the working set if you can specify the working set. Next, how many CPUs? So there's a lot of detail that we have in the paper, but at a high level, we need enough CPU to satisfy the computation requirements, and we use a linear extrapolation in computation time. So if you have one thumbnail compression that takes 100 milliseconds, it'll take twice as long to do those in sequence. And we have, of course, a minimum of one core per server because you can't run a server without any processing. Then, how many servers? So if you take many different types of servers with many different sort of capacities and so on, it actually maps onto vector bin packing, which is NP-complete. We use an integer linear programming formulation where we represent each server and its various constraints, and then we add the storage constraints that we computed before. And sort of what this arrives at is what you would expect, where if you have a highly sequential workload, you'll have more servers with fewer disks because you'll be bus or network constrained, whereas if you have an IOP-heavy workload, you'll be more slot constrained, so you'll have fewer servers with more disks. Then we compute cost based on capital expense, so the cost of each component, and then operating expenses such as power and cooling amortized over a three-year time period. So what does this look like? So if you take our photo sharing example and a set of building blocks, so you know, processor, a few different kinds of hard disk, SSDs, units of memory, gigabit Ethernet, each of these having an associated cost, along with an SLA, so 100 image uploads per second, 300 photo views per second, and 100 tag views per second. Our SEC tool sort of determines that the best configuration looks like this, where we have four 1500 RPM hard drives for photos, an SSD for thumbnails, a 7200 RPM disk with DRAM, and then for the computational aspect of the web server, four cores with two units of memory. So now to actually pack this into servers, so the photos need four disks. We can support four disks in our servers, so they get their own server. Thumbnails and tags fit together in a server, so they're assigned to their own. The storage system itself needs some amount of CPU, so those each get their own cores and memory, and then the web server actually needs all of the four cores to take care of thumbnailing and everything like that, so it's assigned in its own server. So that's how things pack together in general. Now let's look at how we validated that our system is finding low-cost configurations. So what we've done is we've built three different applications. So we have the photo sharing application that we've talked about so far. We built the product search application, which has an HDFS node that has several different product databases and then local nodes that check out the databases and do local computation. And then we have a MapReduce implementation of TerraSort, the binary tuple sorting benchmark. For each of these, we micro-benchmarked them to create the model, and then we took the output of SEC, and we deployed it in our own cluster in our own machine room, and we made to make sure that we're finding a configuration that actually meets the workload. So now, let's look at how we've validated that we're finding low-cost configurations. So on the x-axis, we have the cost relative to SEC, normalized to SEC. On the y-axis, we have the fraction of the SLA satisfied, so you want to be to the top left of the graph at lower cost and satisfying the SLA. For SEC, we find that we're able to slightly exceed the SLA based on our configuration. Now, to sort of be very rigorous and compare our configuration to all possible configurations, one would, in principle, like to instantiate everything and then see what happens. In practice, that's very hard to do. It's very tiresome to go around swapping out hard drives, so we instead perturbed the configuration around the SEC point. So we took the SEC configuration, tried removing cores, swapping out different types of hard disk, trying to find a configuration that is about the same cost but cheaper. And what we found is that none of the changes that we were able to make were able to meet the SLA, at least at lower cost. One point in particular that's interesting here is Alt-4 down in the bottom. And this is the configuration that matches sort of the our base scale-out configuration that works at very low load, where you have a single server with 7,200 RPM disks replicated out for the various data sets. And if we scale that up to actually meet the SLA, then we see a 30% increase in cost. We repeated the same type of experiment for the product search. And again, by swapping out the various components, we weren't able to reach a cheaper configuration that also met the SLA. And in trying to find comparable configurations with different hardware that cost the same, we had similar shortcomings. But again, SEC was able to meet the SLA. Finally, for TerraSort, again, the same idea of perturbing the configuration to see if we can reach it at lower cost. What was interesting was for TerraSort, we could actually use best practice for MapReduce. So on the Cloudera blog, they have a recommendation for if you want to do MapReduce jobs that are compute intensive, you need a configuration that looks like this. And what we did is, so the base point down there is their configuration where you have an equal number of mappers and reduces. We also studied a few cases where we moved around the mappers and reduces, and we found that we were able to increase performance, but it still wasn't able to meet the SLA, at least at comparable cost to SEC. And if we scale that configuration up to meet the performance demands, we see a 16% increase in cost. So now let's look at, now that we have sort of shown that we're actually finding these low-cost configurations, let's look at how we can use SEC for cluster planning. So one of the most interesting things in getting this output of low-cost configurations across workloads is you can look at trends and changes in storage demands. So in the photo sharing application, if you start at some kind of low workload, you might end up with a configuration where you have just disks assigned to everything, but as we've seen before, that doesn't scale. And so if you wanted, in the short term to move up to, say, 500 uploads per second, you would get a very different configuration, and so you would want to consider, maybe I should buy a configuration that supports SSDs and disks with a lot of DRAM to support the workload. Now, one of the other concerns you might have is, hey, this is a model, what if it's wrong? We have some boundaries in here and they seem very, fairly tight. And that's another thing that our tool helps you explore. So for a given output, our tool can tell you how sensitive it is to the given parameter. So for the photo sharing configuration we've talked about so far, the output is going to be the same given a fairly wide range of parameters and photo size, thumbnail sizes, and thumbnail sizes. At the same time, if you notice that you are close to one of these transition points, SEC can let you know what parameters your output is most sensitive to. So for our data set, if you saw a 20% drop in 7,200 RPM drives, you could then buy enough of them that you'd be able to satisfy the workload. And similarly, you can explore cases where hard drive costs increase by 200% because there was flooding somewhere, and then actually, go ahead and try and do long-term planning. So that's our tool, SEC, which works for finding low-cost cluster configurations. It's able to save 2 to 4 times over simple scale-out photo sharing and product search configurations. We get the same results as best practice, but at 16% lower cost. We're able to do this by finding better matches to the hardware based on the application requirements rather than simply scaling things out. Our tool is useful for predicting output sensitivity and future cluster needs. In future work, we'd like to more precisely model cluster networks, look at things like cloud deployment, so going through Amazon and saying, you need 20 small instances or you need 5 large instances, something like that. And we'd also like to look at automatic model generation. Thank you, and I'd like to invite questions.
Hi, Sang-Yan Cho from the University of Pittsburgh. It's great to find that you did some long-term consideration here, but I wondered if you've considered recurring costs like electric bill And if you have, in the future, if you have a more demanding SLA, you need to expand your system and, you know, building on the current optimal configuration, you know, you add some more and that's not going to be optimal potentially. So have you considered these things and how would you incorporate these, you know, recurring cost in the future?
So as it stands in our model, we include the cost of power in terms of the amortized power for the individual components. So we do include aspects of power, though we do not currently include aspects of provisioning for power. So that's something that we could extend the model with. Similarly, our tool can also assist in studies, though we don't have an ironed out methodology for it. But considering, like, if my cluster looks like this now, is it more cost effective to move to another cluster configuration or to continue scaling it out?
Fred Douglas, EMC. I'm wondering if you could comment on the computational cost of SCC if you're trying to apply this to a very large scale configuration with lots of choices. And also, when you compare the SCC result to, you said you perturbed things, say, why don't we swap this, oh, it all works badly. How far did you try perturbing things so that you could sort of, you know, do like a simulated annealing approach or something where you sort of keep trying different alternatives and see if eventually it improves?
So in terms of the computation cost, for larger configuration spaces, we use gradient descent, so we can pick multiple random starting points and make sure that we're finding a more global minimum. And then in terms of perturbing the actual cluster configuration, I think some of that is up to how much one can do from a like an actual swapping out parts standpoint. I can imagine doing a more principled approach where you try and find much further configuration points that still meet demands.
Ben Reed from Yahoo. As you were talking, it kind of reminded me of the Starfish project from the database community that tunes Hadoop parameters. I mean, they keep the hardware constant, but they tune the parameters. And I was wondering, in their model, they had both the processing modeled and the working set modeled. So you could kind of, and they built it by profiling. And so you could kind of change the two. I was wondering, this seems to add like yet another dimension of now configuring the hardware. How would you, I mean, in theory, it seems like you should have a model that has, you know, these multiple dimensions, and would you be able to tune them all at once, or do you view them as like complementary?
I'm not familiar with the work, though from the sound of it, I think that there may be some overlap. Our focus was more from a cluster planning perspective, because what we've heard from unnamed storage providers and others that they have this problem where they don't know like what the right configuration looks like. And so there's that perspective, but something that we heard certainly during the poster session is there are a lot of people where they have their current configuration and they want to know how best to use it. And in terms of tuning MapReduce, our tool can provide some guidance in getting the right number of mappers and reducers.
Yeah, I guess what I'm really asking is how much, they found that tuning the configuration the software configuration parameters made huge differences in how the workload that actually got to the storage, you know, materialized. So if you have these big differences when you tune software, tune the configuration parameters of the software, and then you also have these big differences when you tune the hardware, how do you optimize them both together if you were to put them together?
I suspect it would be fruitful work to pursue, and it will be very very complicated because the computations that we're performing are relatively complex, and I imagine that their tuning computations are also very complex, and so bringing them together could be very hard, though there might be an interesting middle ground.
Hello, Noman Rafiq from Google. So I'm wondering if you have thought about doing the same process when you're using the cluster for multiple applications at the same time. Like if I was running TerraSort and photo sharing on the cluster at the same time, how would things change and how can the model be enhanced to take care of that?
That's certainly something that we've thought about improving in the future. As I'm sure many of us know, as soon as you introduce multiple applications on the same cluster, you get many interference effects. And so from our perspective, we can try to model it from the worst case scenario, and it's something that we'd like to study more in the future.
Randall Burns, the Johns Hopkins University. So first of all, I talked to the people at Sacramento City College in the development office, and they'll be in touch about this SCC thing. And the second is, so using exactly your tool, there's perhaps a different variant. So this notion of I'm gonna optimize configurations and change parts is not really the way people deploy clusters, right, in the cloud. They choose from a set of instances. So could you use exactly this tool to go to Amazon and say, here are the set of instances you need to provide that are gonna help provide a rich environment to meet more SLAs and say they've got the wrong instances. Because I get my Amazon large memory instance, I have 22 Amazon time schedule slices, I don't know what that means.
That's something that we'd like to extend our work to. In some of our initial experiments with Amazon systems, we ran into some quirks with their storage, and so we decided it would be easier from an experimental standpoint to pursue our own configuration, but that is certainly something that we want to explore in the future. Thanks.
Just really quick, is this tool available?
We'll have to talk to my co-authors afterwards.
Okay, sounds like there's a lot of interest.
Thanks.